Cruise AM1280ThePatriot.com.
This is the Northern Alliance Radio Network, the longest-running conservative talk show in the Twin Cities.
It's great to be back in Minnesota today.
Political analysis of the good, the bad, and the outright crazy. Now, here's your headline act, Mitch Berg.
Welcome back, Twin Cities and world. It's the wind beneath the right wing. The show that says, send us your tired, huddled masses yearning to see red. The Northern Alliance Radio Network, making talk radio great again. My name is Mitch Berg. My blog, shotinthedark.info. And our next guest is someone who I owe a debt of immense gratitude to, as do an awful lot of people. He's someone who, when I was first forming my inchoate thoughts about being a Second Amendment advocate and activist, armed me with the most important information of all, and that is the facts, the statistics, all the stuff you actually need to know to show an empirical case that gun control doesn't work and armed private law-abiding citizens do. My pleasure to welcome to the show for the first time in almost 10 years, Dr. John Lott. Welcome to the show, Dr. Lott.
Good to talk to you again.
Great. Always great. We last talked at the Minnesota State Fair like 10 years ago, and you were promoting Freedomnomics, which, by the way, was another excellent book. But you are you're coming back to town here a week from this coming Friday, 2 weeks from yesterday, for the Senate District 56 Republicans in Scott County. And we'll put out the information on getting tickets for that later on here. But your latest book, The War on Guns, is out. And it's a good opportunity to ask you. You've been involved in this. I first became aware of you a little over 20 years ago, Dr. Lott. And you were at that time talking about the statistical case for shall-issue carry laws. Now, that war has largely been won nationwide. There's some holdouts, but this is we've largely gotten that one beat. And the left, the anti-gun crowd, I should say, has largely stopped fighting against that specifically. But the front just keeps on changing. It's like chasing a greased pig, Dr. Lott. What's the latest axis of advance that the left is using in its war on guns?
Right. Well, just first of all, I'm not sure that they've given up on concealed carry. I mean, it's true that 42 states have so-called right to carry type laws. 14 of those in either all or virtually all their states don't even require that people have permits to be able to carry. One of your neighboring states, South Dakota, falls into that category. But
State of North Dakota, actually. Yeah, absolutely.
Right, yeah, North Dakota, right. But the I suppose the big issue right now is these background checks on private transfers of guns. After each of the mass public shootings during the Obama administration, President Obama consistently, the one law that he called for each and every time was background checks on private transfers. I mean, the irony is, if that law had been in effect, there's not one of the mass public shootings during his administration or even in decades before that that would have been stopped as a result of having that law in place. We all want to try to keep criminals from getting guns. The question is, people need to realize that the current background check system is a real mess, that virtually everybody who gets stopped is what we call a false positive. You're stopping a law-abiding good citizen who simply has a name similar to somebody that you really do want to stop. And if 99% of the people that you're stopping are 99% plus percent of the people that you're stopping are mistakes, and it's primarily minorities that are disproportionately falsely stopped. Plus, you have the costs that are associated with such background checks. In Washington, D.C., where I'm near right now, it costs $125 to privately transfer a gun just because of the background check.
Right.
And that may not stop you or I from getting a gun, but it can stop poor people who want to try to go and get a gun to protect themselves or their families.
Yep, absolutely. And young people, who are just finding the need to defend themselves. Absolutely. So a couple of lines of approach here, Dr. Lott. I'm dying to get your opinion on. When I first got involved in the Second Amendment movement, probably about the time when I first read your studies with Mr. Mustard at the University of Chicago, predating More Guns, Less Crime, the left, the anti-gun movement, did try to play with statistics just a bit. They did try to play the statistics game, and it was, you know, they made a good run at it in some cases. It almost seems as if they've given up on an empirical, scientific, statistical, evidentiary case against guns. And to me, as someone who watches these people every day, it almost seems as if they've gone over just telling big lies often enough, and hoping it sticks with enough of the right people to eventually work for them. What's your perspective on the message and the evolution of the anti-gunner message over the last 20 years?
Right. Well, I mean, I think they still try to put out a lot of empirical type claims. You know, one of the things that you've seen happen in like the last six, I guess, 7 years now, has been an explosion in so-called public health research.
Yes.
Because of funding, because of Michael Bloomberg. Between 2011 and 2016, you saw about fivefold increase in studies published in medical journals dealing with gun control issues. It's not just Bloomberg, but George Soros and others have put huge amounts of money into that. And I think one of the points I raise in the war on guns is that if you look over time, you've seen huge changes in people's perceptions about the costs and benefits of guns and their support or opposition to more gun control. Support for gun control pretty much peaked around 1998, 1999, and it fell fairly consistently up until about 2014, and then after that, it's kind of been flat in terms of changes. And I think you can explain about 85% or so of the changes over time simply by looking at people's changing answers to a couple simple questions, and that is things like, does owning a gun in the home make you safer? Does carrying a concealed handgun make you safer? Are you safer by others carrying concealed handguns? For example, in 2000, Gallup had a survey that asked people, does owning a gun in the home make you safer or not? Only 35% of Americans at that time said that owning a gun in the home made them safe. By the end of 2015, it was up to 63%. And you see similar changes in all the other types of questions that I just mentioned. You know, do you feel safer living in a neighborhood where you know more people own guns? Well, the large majority of people now think that they feel safer knowing that other people in their neighborhood own guns. That wasn't true a couple decades ago. And I think people like Bloomberg and Soros, they're smart guys. They see that. And they know that if they're going to get the types of gun control laws passed that they want to get passed, they have to change that perception. And so, you know, you see the $50 million a year that Bloomberg spends on his Everytown group. You see tens of millions of dollars that he spends on other advertising. And I guess in the last two congressional cycles, he spent something like over $49 million on just donations to political candidates for federal office, for Senate and House races, let alone probably even a larger amount for state legislative races. In Minnesota in 2016, he spent, I don't know exactly because it isn't properly reported, but a huge amount of money. Any of the Star Tribune and others will mention how much money he spent on state legislative races.
It was a 10-to-1 ratio. It was, you know, 10-to-1 ratio in 2016 in Minnesota, the nearest we could count. I mean, it was just a lopsided imbalance.
I mean, he spent more on two state Senate races in Virginia in 2015 than the NRA spent on all federal races across the entire country in 2016 in terms of donations. And, you know, that's just two state Senate races. But he knows that he just can't spend it on just the politics. He has to go and change people's views. And so we see all this money he's spending on politics, but he's actually spending an even much larger amount of money going and trying to fund research that supports his views, and then spending money on trying to get publicity for that research. I mean, he set up a whole media outlet called The Trace, where they have journalists hired to cover gun issues and in order to try to influence the rest of the media that way, too.
How effective do you think the Soros media operation has been? I mean, clearly there's difference. It depends on a lot of context. For example, probably not very effective in rural Wyoming at all. But in terms of changing hearts and minds around the country, I've read The Trace. I've spent some time taking apart some of their numbers and some of their rhetoric. Not just The Trace, but of course the whole movement. How effective do you think that is? And do you think that level of effectiveness has the potential to change things over time, Dr. Lott?
Well, he's surely putting a lot of money into it. I mean, I've been asked to testify before state legislatures over the years. I only go when I'm asked by state legislators to come. But you can see the impact that Bloomberg has had in that. You mentioned Wyoming. I guess it was 2 years ago. I was asked to testify on gun-free zone type issues in Wyoming. And, you know, if I'd gone there maybe 10, 15 years ago before that, you would have seen everybody in the room would have been kind of a pro self-defense type person. When I was there in 2015, though, it was Bloomberg had hired buses from the University of Wyoming to come and bring people to the state capitol. He